Well, the Panthers took care of business coming off the bye, and that sets up a big-time NFC South showdown down in New Orleans against the Saints. Max Henson and Brian Strickland here with you again on the Panthers podcast. And Strick, the Jets game was one that was certainly not pretty. Those are the words that Ron Rivera used in the locker room after talking to his team following that win. But at this point, I think you will take him any way you can get him, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was, Cam said after the game, he's never heard of a pretty loss. So obviously you take a win any way you can get it in this league. And it was, you know, not stunning to see how it played out. You know, the Jets are, you know, a decent team. Josh McCown has exceeded expectations this year, I feel like, and made them competitive. I think he's kind of a guy that's always underappreciated. And he made it scary for the Panthers. I mean, three touchdown passes, which is, you know, surprising. We may get into that a little bit, that it could have been five touchdown passes, too, by the way, if not for some Austin Seferian Jenkins
mishaps.
That's a good word. But then, you know, they found a way to win, and that's what you wanted in a game like this. I don't think you truly look ahead in this league by any stretch, but you know the Saints were coming up next, and the Panthers need to take care of business to set up that game, and they found a way with the first defensive touchdown of the year and the first special teams touchdown of the year. And then I felt like the defense closed really strong and got after McCown late down the stretch of that win.
Yeah, a lot of people were using the phrase trap game coming into this Jets one, and I kind of just thought it was a tough game, you know, not necessarily a trap game. I mean, it's tough. You know, you're going against a Jets team on the road who's played people really tough throughout the course of the season, given a lot of good teams some trouble.
Right.
They haven't been able to come out with wins, but it's always been pretty close. They've got a good defense. They're also coming off a bye themselves. I mean, I think I personally expected that to be a close game. And certainly in the third quarter there, it looked like, you know, this might turn in the Jets' favor here. But to the rescue came Luke Kuechly and that Carolina defense. The scoop and score, fumble return off the Wes Horton strip sack. And then, as you mentioned, not only do you get your first defensive touchdown of the year, but you get your first special teams touchdown of the year with, it seemed like, forever.
Right.
The Panther fans on Twitter immediately were asking me, when's the last time a punt return touchdown happened? The last one was the Philly Brown muffed punt that returned for a touchdown against the Bears in 2014, which counts, but like doesn't really, because it was such a kind of crazy play.
Yeah.
But still, point being, it had been a while since the special teams had made that big a play to help this team. And you know, this time of year, it just kind of felt like you always hear you're going to need all three phases to contribute. Well, that certainly was one where all three phases were absolutely needed, because the offense was not playing at a very high level for most parts of that game. And so the defense and special teams kind of came and said, you know, we'll put you on our back and help get you to a win here.
Yeah, I mean, far from a perfect performance across the board, but all three of the phases contributed. And, you know, if you are a team that can win without playing your best in this league, you want to play your best every week, but we know, you know, what a week-to-week league and proposition that is. But you win against a good opponent on the road when you're not playing your best, I feel like it bodes well. And, you know, this is probably silly, but it's such a week-to-week league that it makes me feel like, hey, the offense is going to come back with a flourish the next week, and you certainly need that going down against, you know, New Orleans and, you know, in the biggest game of the year, clearly, as you look at the standings and you know, what's on the line.
And that's spot on, I think, too, your comment about needing to find a way to win when you're not playing your best. I think that's NFL football, really, in a nutshell, right? I mean, just the nature of this league, the good teams figure out a way to get it done. Bottom line, doesn't matter how it has to happen, just to come out with a W. That's what good teams figure out a way to do. And I think right now, look, this Panthers team is 8-3. Everybody kind of week to week has been looking at them a little bit differently, but I think they're proving they're a pretty darn good team, and they found a way to win against a Jets team that made it pretty tough on them for sure. Well, just want to let everybody know we're going to have Will Brinson on as our Bo's guest this week. Our first second-time guest on the Panthers podcast. So
yeah, we'll have to mention that to him. I'm sure he'll be very excited to hear that.
We should definitely we'll make sure you mention that to him, Brian. But definitely excited to have Will on. But before we get to that, Strick, let's look a little bit closer at that Jets game before we turn things forward to the Saints. And I guess what beyond the two big touchdowns that we've gone in, what about that game do you think is the biggest cause for some optimism maybe coming out of it? The things that you liked that you saw.
Yeah, I mean, optimism-wise, Christian McCaffrey had a good day.
Yeah.
you know, he had his longest run of the year, 40 yards, great blocking on that play as well. Kind of showed a little bit of power in the running game. You know, that's something he hasn't really been asked to do that much. I mean, we've tried that with him, but it hasn't necessarily worked out.
Yep.
But showed he could do that, that he could kind of push some defensive guys back and gain some yards. You know, and then again, you know, the running game numbers added up again to, what was it, 150-ish? Is that what it is?
Yeah, 145.
Yeah, I don't have it in front of me. So, you know, that's one thing I would say. And then, you know, just making big plays. Like, you know, it's – you know, this team, it's about moving the sticks. It's about that. But you had chunk plays, I feel like, here and there. But it's kind of weird to say that it was in every area. You know, you had – I'm going to contradict myself here. He had a 40-yard run, McCaffrey, and that turned into a field goal. He didn't break it all the way. You had the, you know, Devin Funchess is obviously another one.
How about Funchess? I think that's a big one for me. Following the Kelvin Benjamin trade, he moves into that X wide receiver role, the quote-unquote number one wide receiver for this offense, and all he's done is produce like a number one wide receiver. I mean, 7 catches for 108 yards, goes over 100 for the first time this season. And, you know, I just think that it's exciting to see him kind of relish that role.
Yeah.
And look, it could have been a much bigger day for him because he did, unfortunately, have a couple drops that would have been some bigger chunk plays. I mean, he could have had close to 200 yards and a touchdown in that game. Still, without making a couple of those plays, he finishes with 108. And look, obviously, you're going to want to clean some of that stuff up. He talked about the fact that those are some catches he's got to make. But I still think you're seeing Devin Funchess really playing into that role the way everybody hoped he would.
Right.
And that's huge for this offense to get that kind of production from him after they made what was such a big move at the time of saying, okay, we're going to say goodbye to Kelvin Benjamin. That put a lot on Funchess to step in and be the guy, so to speak.
Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, he did have one drop that we watched back a couple times that was, you know, I'm sure he was disappointed in that as well. You know, the other side of the coin is, you know, what are the concerns going into the Saints game that you take away from that game? And, you know, speaking of drops, I mentioned Safarian Jenkins. Like, you know, the pass defense is a little bit concerning when you're facing Drew Brees. I don't feel like, and I'm sure we'll get into this, it's quite the same. Not to say it's not the same Drew Brees, but they're not relying on Drew Brees as much down in New Orleans as they have. But you know what he's capable of, and the secondary had some hiccups against the Jets.
Yeah.
There's no denying that. You know, Ron Rivera did a good job of explaining that really, you know, It was a handful of plays, but you know, that's fine to say after a win.
Right.
You know, that can be the difference between
a handful
and
of plays is all it takes to get you a loss. Right. Yeah, you know, of course that's the flip side of that. Yeah, I mean, Steve Wilks came out and said, the Panthers defensive coordinator, that he was disappointed with the big plays that were given up in the secondary. It's very uncharacteristic. Can't happen. They've got to clean that up. And as you said, the spotlight is going to be on that secondary coming off that kind of performance and going down to the Superdome to play the Saints.
Right.
It is not the air raid Saints that we've seen in the past. I mean, they're running the ball really well, which you could argue makes them even more dangerous than when it's just Breeze slinging it around. I mean, they've had some really good balance. But, yeah, I mean, it's going to be on that group again to show that they can put last week against the Jets behind them, where they gave up too many chunk plays to the air, and kind of lock down or try to a Saints offense that, as we know, that they might not be the air raid Saints. But one thing we do know about Breeze and Sean Payton is if they feel like there's a weakness they can exploit, they are not afraid to go after it time and time and time again. So the challenge will be on that secondary to stand up to that.
Yeah, and Breeze, I mean, obviously a unique talent. The challenge with him is getting to him, you know, as pass rushers. Like, obviously he's not going to, you know, spin move out of the pocket and, you know, go outside and gain, you know, 30 yards on a play that the defense kind of seemed to have in control. But he's going to get rid of the ball quick. He's going to see things before the snap that are going to challenge that defensive back group. And he's going to, you know, he's going to deliver the ball. I mean, that's what he does. Obviously, very much looking forward to the game, Max. We'll talk to Will about it here soon. I have both of these defenses are clearly good. I mean, the Saints have exceeded expectations. The Panthers have at least met expectations. You know, playing like one of the top units in the league. But something about this, maybe it's something about the dome. I don't know. I think we could have maybe even old fashioned shootout between these teams,
which is what we saw last year. You know, right? Yeah. The most recent memory of these two teams facing off in the Superdome was one of those, you know, point after point being piled up in this game, and Cam Newton and that offense almost led a pretty improbable comeback, but it just wasn't enough. You know, I think anytime you go into that place, you kind of think about a lot of points being scored. Yeah. It just kind of has that reputation. But we'll see. It is certainly a big game. Exciting to be at this point with the Panthers 8-3, the Saints 8-3. You know, we know back in week three, it was the Saints who came in here 0-2 at Bank of America Stadium and won that game against the Panthers decisively and then went on a run of winning eight consecutive.
Yeah.
Then they got knocked off by the Rams, who have been a surprise team in the league, no doubt, have been very competitive all year long. Do you think there's anything the Rams did that was maybe – I feel like this gets said a lot when a team finally, you know, gets – knocked off. It was a blueprint shown by the Rams as to how to maybe beat this Saints team or what to do to kind of counteract what they like to do on offensively and defensively?
Possibly, but I don't know how you replicate it because, I mean, the Rams have a pretty fearsome front four as well, and they were able to get to Breeze, and they were able to disrupt him in a way that's hard to do. And, you know, the Rams' offense has been awesome this year. I mean, no one really saw that coming. Obviously, they, you know, took care of business. They handled the Saints' defense pretty well. You know, the Saints have had some injuries on defense, so you think, you know, maybe there's opportunity there. But I think the main thing they did was disrupt Drew Brees. And, I mean, that's great. The Panthers have that capability. They have the people up front to do it. But, you know, we go back to talking about the dome. It seems like it's harder to do down there.
Certainly.
So that is a potential blueprint. You know, that's always a great starting point for a defense, but it's easier said than done as well.
Yeah, I think that blueprint has been shared across the league for a while now, right? I mean, yeah, you want to get Breeze off his spot, and you want to disrupt the timing of that offense. I mean, we talk about that every time. The Panthers see the Saints twice a year. We've been here for a number of years now. It's every time we get to this game, it's always about getting him off his spot and trying to disrupt that timing. Wilkes, of course, will always tell you, got to stop the run first.
Right.
And I think that's a big priority here against the Saints team this year, especially. You know, Ingram has been very, very productive. And if you look at the highlights from that Rams-Saints game, Alvin Kamara was the guy you're seeing over and over again making big plays. I mean, that rookie running back has been fantastic for them. So the Panthers obviously have to make sure they are aware of where he is, because when he gets into some space, it can be trouble. So, look, this Saints offense, of course, is always going to be a challenge to defend. But I think, as we said, you know, the Rams got after Breeze, made things tough on him with a really good front four. Well, I mean, the Panthers have a pretty good front four themselves.
Right,
they got a defense that's known to get after some people, and they're going to absolutely have to do that to come away with a win in New Orleans.
Yeah, and I always got to throw special teams in there too, Max. I think there's opportunity there as well for the Panthers. I mean, that was one of the – you talked about positive signs. I mean, obviously the punt return's a positive sign, but it was just kind of capper about how good the special teams units have been for the Panthers this season. And we've, you know, seen how that group can truly be difference makers as far as field position. It's just, I don't know if this could be a field position game, so to speak,
but that
certainly can't hurt. But, you know, the specialists continue to have a great year. You know, last year's shootout, it was a shootout last year down there, but it still came down to special teams. A last second long field goal won it. Feel really good about where those units are. The year Graham Gano is having is kind of going under the radar a little bit, I feel like.
Pilardi's been fantastic.
Right. And, you know, the Saints have had some struggles on special teams. So I think that's kind of a hidden area, as they say,
no doubt,
where that could make a difference.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, at this point, let's turn over to our Bose guest line. We've got Will Brinson of CBS Sports. Last time we had you on, it was a while ago, we had you on after Carolina had just come away with a big victory against the Patriots in week four. So a lot has changed, obviously, since then. I guess just to start, curious on your thoughts and kind of just where this Panthers team stands here at 8-3 going into a big matchup against the Saints.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're a Panthers fan, you got to be pretty excited. And by the way, I didn't realize it had been that long. For some reason, I thought it was sooner, but the season's flying by. I think the Panthers they're in a good spot. I mean, they're 8-3. You know, they are the 5 seed right now in the NFC, in a really difficult NFC. And I think when you look at Carolina's season, you see that there are various instances where, you know, this could be could have ended up being a 6-win team if things didn't break right. And for the, you know, I think the Jets game is a good example. I mean, the Jets game to me defines a lot of Carolina's season, because what you have is a really good defense that is capable of changing the game. That's exactly what they did when Luke Kuechly scooped and scored on that fumble from Josh McCown. And you have an offense that's sort of been up and down this year. And sometimes the defense is going to have to come to the offense's rescue. I think the important thing for Carolina now is that it gets a shot to win the NFC. to win the NFC South, excuse me, and to take the division. You know, you still got to beat Atlanta. There's games left to be played, but you get this game against New Orleans. Both teams 8-3, and the Panthers are getting the Saints in a little bit of a bad spot, I think, because you had Marshawn Lattimore, Ken Crawley, the two starting cornerbacks, were out last week, so they're going to be a little banged up. Alex Okafor, one of their top pass rushers, is going to be missing. I think the defense is sort of coming back to earth a little bit, and if Carolina's offense can get going in the way that it was going before the bye and in the way that it went against New England and Detroit, then this is a game that Carolina can and should win. You know, it's not going to be easy because the Saints are a tough team, but I think this is one of those spots where Cam Newton tends to rise up. You know, people might be questioning after the Jets game. This is a spot where he tends to rise up and play really well. And if you're Carolina, you are in a good spot for the long haul when it comes to both the division and the NFC playoffs.
Yeah, and Will, he's played well down there at the Superdome the last three times. I was just looking up some numbers, 10 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. Kind of a notoriously tough place to play, you know, certainly loud in that dome. Does that just kind of exemplify, you've kind of already said it, you know, that Cam kind of embraces those type of opportunities and playing, you know, on the road in those type of environments?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think, you know, you saw it after the New England game, you know, when he was sort of firing off missives to reporters. Cam plays better. Look, a lot of athletes do this. Cam plays better when he's got his back against the wall, chip on his shoulder, et cetera, et cetera. And I think part of this season has sort of been maybe creating that chip and motivating himself to go out there and play really well. You know, this is a game he understands what's at stake here. I mean, you know, there's no doubt about it. He knows how important it is to go down to New Orleans in a game that I would assume is going to be, you know, a prominently placed game on the national schedule. You know, I mean, it's not a division title game, but it has certainly division title implications. And yeah, I think you'll see Cam's got an uneven record over the course of his career: 85.7 passer rating down against the Saints, 7-6 win total, the under 60% completion. But he has gone down there and played well. You know, in New Orleans, in the dome. And like I said, you know, it's a spot where the Saints defense might be suffering a little bit from injuries, maybe struggling. You know, you have the Panthers, you know, hopefully get Ryan Khalil back. We'll see about Greg Olsen. You know, but it's certainly, I think, a position for Cam to go out and play extremely well and to put the, you know, to give the Panthers a shot at taking the NFC South.
Will came prepared with some numbers.
Yeah, I was writing those down. Those will be useful later in the week. Thank you.
But Will, I mean, you talked about that Jets game a little bit earlier, and I just wondering for you. You kind of talked about that as really exemplifying really Carolina's season. But do you see that as being any cause for concern going into this matchup? The way Carolina had to scrape and claw to get a victory against a Jets team that is not really in the playoff picture. And, you know, we've talked about how impressive Cam can be in big moments. Sunday against the Jets obviously was not a banner day for Cam and that offense. So is there any cause for concern coming out of that game? Or at this point, is it just you'll take him how you can get him at this point in the season?
No, I think there's definitely concern. I mean, look, Cam completed less than 40% of his passes. That's a red flag. And, you know, regardless of who you're playing, the Jets are better than people think. I think they're probably closer to a bottom 15 team than a bottom 5 team, if that's
sure. I think
if that helps at all. They got some nice pieces on defense. Jamal Adams has played really well this season. Certainly some guys on the defensive line, and their offense is better than people think. So I thought that Jets game was gonna be close. I thought it would play out that way. I thought the Jets would actually keep it within a touchdown. Some late stuff happened, and Carolina kind of pulled away. But you know, I think the biggest concern you have is that there has been this sort of stop and go play from the offense. I mean, that stretch on the road at New England, at Detroit in weeks 4 and 5, it's like, wow, this, you know, Cam's gotten healthy. This offense has come alive, and then he follows it up with a rough performance against the Eagles. It wasn't entirely his fault, and the Eagles are a very good team. Struggles again in Chicago the following week, back-to-back losses. And then you see him really pick it up against Tampa, Atlanta, and then explode against Miami. And the thought process is, okay, 2 weeks to prep for the Jets on the road, coming off a bye. You're getting Greg Olsen back. Ryan Khalil back. This offense is going to take off. And then they come out and struggle even more. I think it was a look-ahead game for the Panthers to a degree, and to come away with a win is a big deal. But the one concerning thing you have if you're a Panthers fan is that you're watching this offense, you know, look like a stop-and-go driver on the highway. You know, slam brakes, hit gas, slam brakes, hit gas. And that's, you can't have that when you get to the postseason. I mean, they're not there yet. And we're only in week 13, so there's another full month to really get it going. But there needs to be some consistency over a longer period of time for this Panthers offense if you want to buy into the idea that they can put together a Super Bowl winning stretch in the postseason.
Well, my challenge is to ask this question in a way that makes sense. I'm kind of nervous it's not going to work, but I'm going to give it a shot.
Okay.
So the thing you just said about stop and go, one step forward, one step back, that type of thing. I think when you're real close to a team like this and you follow them all the time, you can get frustrated. Like, why does it always have to be this way with this team? You know, why is it like this? And you feel like the other teams maybe kind of have their identity, have it together. But is that really more common than you realize because you're not looking at the other teams as closely? Do you know what I mean? Like, are most teams in the league go through this up and down, and just the goal is to be your best at the end of the season?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, I think that's a – no, I think that a lot of times you can get too – yeah, it's easy to get too close to the situation and to follow a certain situation and say, God, this is so – so frustrating or, in whatever case it is, my team isn't playing well. But when you take a bigger picture look at it, I mean, look, the Kansas City Chiefs were 5-0 and looked like the best team in football. And now all of a sudden, Chiefs fans, half of the Chiefs fans on Twitter have a Alex Smith with a red ring and a cross, like an X through it. Like they want to get rid of Alex Smith.
Right.
So, I mean, he was in midseason MVP. There were very few instances, and I think the only two that really stand out to me would be the Patriots and the Eagles, of teams where they've had an entire year of consistency from one side of the ball. And even the Patriots, God, the first 6 weeks of the season, first 8 weeks of the season, there was – partially caused by the Panthers, there was all this hand-wringing about how bad the defense was and could they fix it. And,
right.
And it's sort of the week-to-week nature of the NFL and how you can get caught up in that. A great example, I think, of a similar situation, and maybe even a worse situation because of the talent they have, would be the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Steelers fans are about to pull their hair out because they don't know what they're getting week-to-week. I mean, some weeks you get this, Ben Roethlisberger comes out and explodes offensively and puts up four touchdowns, and Antonio Brown's getting 200 yards, and the Steelers look unstoppable, and Le'Veon Bell's running the ball everywhere. And then another week, Ben comes out and throws five picks against the Jacksonville Jaguars. And so I think that it's a very common thing in the NFL.
Yeah.
Each week is we have such a short week because of the turnaround, especially with Thursday Night Football, that a lot of times we get caught up in these week to week referendums.
Right.
It's hard to get out
Absolutely.
Of them. And people forget that each week in the NFL is really difficult to prepare. I mean, just because the Panthers are good and had 2 weeks to get ready for the Jets doesn't mean the Jets were laying down. I mean, well, the Panthers coming to town, favored by, a touchdown. No reason for us to show up. I mean,
right.
the Jets were playing for that game, the same way that they prep for every game. I mean, and so you're getting the – most weeks, most teams, some exceptions, you're getting the best shot from every team every week. And so I think that it's easy to get microcosmic viewpoint on the Panthers, especially with the personnel they have and sort of the criticism that's often been levied at the quarterback and maybe the offensive coordinator. But, it's a very common thing in the NFL.
That was a great answer to a very convoluted question, but it seemed like you followed it. So I appreciate that. Piggybacking on that a little bit, then, does that mean as a Panther fan, if you want to have a positive spin on it, you look at the potential for this team? Because obviously, where their ceiling is, I guess, as we move toward the playoffs, has got to be considered pretty high as you look around the league.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, I think, and I've been saying this for, I think I said it, I don't know if I said it last time I was on here, but I've been saying this for a couple months now. The Panthers are a team that have, like, the Panthers have an elite defense. We know they have one of the top five defenses in the league. I mean, I feel like that's safe to say. There are a lot of Philly, Minnesota, Carolina, Seattle's not up there anymore. But you know, you also have Jacksonville there, and then Baltimore. I think those are probably the top five defenses in the league. Maybe you could, maybe the Chargers slide in if they keep playing the way they've been playing. But the Panthers have an elite defense. And as cliche and dumb as it is to say defenses win championships, they do win championships. And I think you see a formula, if you're the Panthers, for, you know, stacking up these wins, starting to play some good offense in December, running the ball effectively, getting used to all the new parts, Cam getting healthy, getting Greg Olsen back, getting Ryan Khalil back, finding some sort of rhythm in the month of December and playing. Like, again, you go back to the Chiefs or even go back to the Saints, and let's see how the Saints season plays out. But you don't want to hit your stride in September. That doesn't do anybody any good, right? I mean, like, you don't want to hit your stride in October or November either. You want to hit your stride in the middle of December, late December, and if you can go into the playoffs and you have an elite defense and you have an offense that has a high ceiling, then you can go. Then you can win the whole thing. I mean, I don't think that Carolina's situation is the same as 2015. I would almost liken it a little bit to the Ravens in 2012, which is you know, a team with a great defense and a high upside on offense. Maybe a bit of a streaky passer in Cam Newton, who just if he finds his rhythm for four games or three games, the Panthers can easily win the whole thing, and it wouldn't be surprising at all to see them do that, especially if they can navigate the NFC. I think you know, you get on the other side and you're not going to see a team like the Denver Broncos waiting for you. You know, a team that can play really great defense on the other side. You're just going to have to win a couple of really tough games, but Carolina can hang with anybody in the NFC. They've shown that the record states that, and I think you just got to keep that defense playing at a high level and hope that the offense can find that rhythm here in the final stretch of the season.
Maybe they start to establish and find that rhythm down in New Orleans. That would be a perfectly good time to do it. But that seems like a good note to end this on. Will, thanks again so much for joining us, man. It was awesome.
Yeah, for sure. Anytime, guys.
Hey, Will, you're our first ever second-time guest, so the certificate will be in the mail very soon.
Yes, I love it.
Thanks, man.
Thanks, Will. Well, Brian, I think we've sufficiently covered the big-time matchup this week between the Saints and Panthers down at the Superdome. I think now it's a good time to turn things over to the more important segment, the most important segment of the podcast, our Food for Thought segment. And this week we got to talk about one of really people's favorite culinary destinations.
Yeah.
Down in New Orleans, the Cajun Creole cuisine.
Yeah, White Castle. Oh, no, sorry.
White Castle?
I'm kidding. There's a White Castle right there on Bourbon Street that I've passed a million times.
We're going to start a conversation about New Orleans food, some of my favorite, but the White Castle? That's not what I expected.
No, I just more think, why do people go there? But I guess being on Bourbon Street, it's open 24 hours, you know, that might explain why people...
Maybe Popeyes you maybe would have thrown out. I mean,
yeah.
That's got a little bit of a connection to the area, though I could never eat it down. There's so many better options, but what's your favorite kind of... Are you going down to New Orleans, you know the type of offerings they've got down there, the great seafood and obviously all the just jambalaya, gumbo, all this kind of great stuff. I mean, what's your number one target?
Those are all good. I will say that, you know, I'm not a huge seafood guy. Like if we had done this podcast 10 years ago, did podcasts exist 10 years ago? I'm not sure. So, but if we had done something like...
Jared says no. Intern Jared says no.
No, it's confirmed. So we couldn't have done this 10 years ago, but if we had done this 10 years ago, I barely ate any seafood, to be honest. Like, I've slowly but surely become somewhat of a seafood guy. But I know the first time I went down to New Orleans, I went down, dating myself here, 1993 for the Final Four, where UNC knocked off the Michigan Wolverines with the Chris Webber timeout.
That's a pretty famous one. Yeah,
yeah.
Well,
if you're ever watching that, look for me. I'm right there behind the Michigan bench. It's, I'm a little bit younger then. But... red beans and rice with sausage. You know me and sausage. Like, I think that's underrated, underappreciated down there because of all the seafood talk, which I understand the seafood talk. And by the way, to defend myself, I'll mention White Castle. When I think about that 93 trip, I remember we were at a Cajun restaurant. I did get the red beans and rice. And one of the guys in our group saw a hot dog cart go by. They have these hot dog carts down there on Bourbon Street that are shaped like hot dogs. I don't know if you've ever noticed these or not. They're like all over the place.
Sure.
And he actually got up, ordered a hot dog from the vendor, and then came back to the table, and that's what he had for dinner. So.
Yeah, that is just unacceptable. that's just absurd. Did anybody give him a hard time?
Very much so.
Okay,
it was ridiculous.
Yeah, no, you can't have that. I mean, there's so much to that New Orleans has to offer when it comes to food down there. I mean, I'm a big, you know, the flame grilled oysters and all that with everything they throw on top of those. I mean, it's incredibly good. po' boys.
Yeah.
I mean, just
I know you're
a
big po' boy.
A good
boy.
Shrimp po' yeah. boy. Yeah. I'm a big po' boy boy. Is
yes.
that what you just said?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, that
yes.
sounds a little strange, but we'll roll with it. Jambalaya for me is kind of like the red beans and rice. You know, it's
yeah, it
similar
is.
In
That's
a lot
true.
Of ways. It's just a little more complex, I guess. I put a little bit more in there.
Yeah.
But that's like one of my personal favorite things yeah. too. Like I've gotten that as just like a side with the oysters, and that's almost been yeah. my favorite part. It's just that little bit of that bowl of jambalaya. Yeah.
Gumbo versus jambalaya.
Yeah, I mean gumbo is you know more of that like kind of soup as opposed right. to a jambalaya, which is a little you
yeah.
know, more you know, thicker.
But do you like one better, or it depends
it
on your
depends.
Mood?
I mean the gumbo is great. I mean when I was down with some buddies in New Orleans, we went to that Commander's Palace,
oh,
which
yeah.
is that famous restaurant, and I got this like gumbo trio. So it was like three different kinds. It was like some turtle
oh,
gumbo,
yeah.
which
mm-hmm.
is famous down there, and some regular seafood gumbo. That doesn't sound very good. I can't remember what the other one was. Maybe even some sort of even chowder, but like yeah. those, that was spectacular.
Yeah. Did the turtle taste like chicken? Isn't that what, or is it a little
yeah,
gamey?
Kind of.
Those are the things.
I don't know if I would have
say.
Known
yeah.
if somebody wouldn't have told me. I don't know. I wouldn't have been able to tell
yeah.
you really that it was anything.
Yeah, I tried that in Mobile, which is also another spot known for oysters. My oysters take would be that, well, my mom claims I used to eat oysters like a madman when I was, you know, 5 years old.
Maybe that's
or whatever.
Why you got sick of them.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't remember this at all. She said fried oysters is what I had. I can't remember having a fried oyster. But the thing about the way they prepare the oysters in New Orleans and Mobile, for that matter, with the like Parmesan cheese,
butter that,
all
yeah,
that.
Garlic.
Like, I don't even really like. If you gave me just a raw plain oyster right now, I wouldn't touch it. But all of a sudden, it's like, yeah, I'll eat those oysters because of the
would,
way
yeah.
they're prepared. I mean, the yeah. oyster almost doesn't even matter.
That's essentially
equation.
What you're eating is all of what's on top of it. I mean, and then you're taking the bread into what's left. And I mean, we can get half of our department here and here to talk about that. I mean,
yeah.
that's one of everybody's favorite things.
Yeah, but I still think dessert. Have you ever had a praline, like a true New Orleans praline?
Yep. Yeah, and I thought you were going to go beignets. I know you're a big beignet guy.
Yeah, of course. Those are outstanding as well. I mean, Café du Monde, if anybody's ever been down there. It's not what I expected the first time I went there. It sounds kind of like frou-frou, right? Like
it does.
Café du Monde. And then yes. it's just like this, like the Walmart of, you know, dessert places. I don't
yeah.
know. It's just kind of, but I love the beignets there. So
they are
that
really
matters.
Good. It is, when you go there though, you do have to, of course, brace yourself for being covered in powdered sugar. I mean, it just gets
right.
everywhere. Those like small little tables you have to like get squeezed into
yes.
and wait forever to try to get somebody's attention to get your
yeah.
beignets. So
yeah.
there's some pros and cons.
Yeah,
to the
didn't
whole
you
experience.
Visualize like that name? Doesn't it sound like it would be this like lovely French bistro
does, yes.
with, you know, fine china and all that?
Yeah, it's not
and
quite it, that.
And it's like, you
but
know,
the beignets are awesome.
It's like a cattle call.
The beignets are pretty awesome. yeah, that's some of my favorite food down there in New Orleans. Love going down there and eating.
Yeah, there's so many places we haven't even tried. I'm sure, Max. I mean, remember we stayed away, kind of out in the, you know, not downtown, and it was just like this hole in the wall.
Oh yeah, this is a cool story.
You know,
yeah.
strip mall type spot that like you would almost have to have a recommendation from someone to think about going there. Like it doesn't look like anything.
Yeah.
But then, you know, I love going to TripAdvisor and you look and it's considered the top place and you're like,
yeah.
really? And
yeah.
so how many places, I mean, you can only imagine how many great chefs there are in New Orleans that you could go to a different place every day and have something great.
Yeah, this was cool too. One of those times we stayed out near the airport, we ended up going to just a good seafood place we saw on TripAdvisor or
oh,
Yelp,
yeah.
whatever. So we got in there,
that's
and
right.
I remember we saw Drayton Florence. So
yeah.
what year must this have been? This was 13,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah.
This was 2013 season. We saw Drayton Florence just kind of by himself hanging out at the bar of this place. With
had his playbook, I think.
Yeah, I think it was like a kind of like iPad or Surface, whatever it was at the time, that he was just kind of watching some film and taking notes. And we said hello to him and just kind of, you know, went to our table. And then sure enough, you know, maybe he'd be embarrassed for us sharing this story, but I thought it was awesome. You know, 15 minutes later, a couple trays of oysters come over to the table, and the waitress tells us it was
yeah.
Drayton Florence who sent him over, and he had since left. But that was pretty cool.
Yeah,
he was a super nice guy, and it was kind of interesting just to see a different piece of the NFL, like a guy here out on the road checking out his playbook on a Saturday before the game. Yeah. Just it was a, just a different kind of perspective on the whole
thing. In Kenner, Louisiana. I remember the name of it. Kenner Seafood.
That's right.
Eventually some more players strolled in. We were kind of early getting there, but I guess, you know, like Byron Bell has connections to that area. If you guys remember Byron, and his family was there. It's like, oh, yeah, this is a good place to go. And, yeah, so, but, you know, as much as I like food, I love free food. So, I mean, obviously, if I didn't think I would touch an oyster, like I wouldn't pay for an oyster necessarily at that point, but this is great, thanks Drayton.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, I have to credit him for me discovering oysters, actually, now that I think about it.
That was cool. I'll always remember that. That was awesome. Now the guy you got to talk to on this team about the food down there is Trey Turner. Gonna have to have to get with Trey later this week and get some recommendations from him.
He told me he likes White Castle, by the way.
No, he didn't.
No, I haven't talked to him about it. Yeah, I'm just kidding.
Don't you? You're going to put his reputation on the line, so you better be careful with that. The LSU and New Orleans native. So definitely we'll have to catch up and Trey. Maybe we'll get back to you guys on that, see what Trey has to say. But I think that'll do it for us, Brian. What do you think?
Yeah, I have nothing else to say, Max.
Nothing else to say. Ready for lunch at this point.
I'm done.
Right? Yep. Yeah. All righty. Well, thanks again for listening this week to the Panthers podcast. It's going to be a good one down in New Orleans. We'll see you again next time right here.